You're listening to Fire Ecology Chats, a podcast series by the Association for Fire Ecology.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bob Keane. I'm the editor-in-chief of the journal Fire Ecology that is published by Springer and run by the Association for Fire Ecology. I have a couple very special guests today, and we're going to be talking about a fire that has a who's who of fire ecologists attached to the author list. So today we're going to learn all about strategic fire zones in the paper, Strategic Fire Zones Are Essential to Fire Risk Reduction in the Western United States. I have two speakers here, and I'd like them to introduce themselves. Malcolm, why don't you go first?
Hello, I'm Malcolm North. I'm a research forest ecologist with the Forest Service and also an affiliate professor at UC Davis.
And Paul?
Yeah. Hello, I'm Paul Hesberg. I'm with the PNW Research Station, and I'm a research landscape ecologist and a fire ecologist. I'm also affiliate professor at University of Washington and Oregon State University.
Well, it's such a joy to have you two here and to learn all about this wonderful paper. I was wondering, Malcolm, if you would like to just give us the overall view of what the paper is all about.
Sure. Thank you, Bob. This paper really comes from a feeling that most of us have working in this field is that the current wildfire situation is getting worse, both in terms of the intensity and the size of fires. And so this was an effort to try to think not entirely outside the box, but try to think of a new approach to deal with that problem, since the current rate of mechanical fuels treatments and prescribed fire are really a drop in the bucket of size-wise to be able to impact wildfires in the West. So what we're discussing in this paper is identifying areas where fire is the default, and particularly fire that is started by lightning ignitions, cultural burning, or prescribed fire, and that these zones are places where you allow that to happen either through natural ignition or intentionally putting fire in them within the historical fire cycle.
Very interesting. Paul, you got something more to add about this paper?
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Bob. So one of the things that we did as an author group is we evaluated, you know, how big this additional tool in the toolbox could be. And our thought process is that there's a variety of things that we can do to get the upper hand on wildfire. And so the thought here was that we develop these zones that are away from the populated area, so 1 to 2.5 kilometers, and then ask the question, how big is an area where we might be able to use wildfires in a modified suppression way to actually do work, to carry some of the water of getting good fire on the landscape so that we had more throttle control on flame length, fire rate of spread, fire line intensity, and the potential for crown fires. What we found out is that the area is pretty darn vast in the western U.S. It's between like 8 and 13 million hectares. To get acres multiplied by about 2.5, that's a big deal. And most of it is actually outside of wilderness areas. It's not in wildlands per se. So the idea here is that while we're doing things like developing pods and potential control lines, those kinds of things, can we pre-plan these areas, have a burn plan for them so we clearly understand what's up when there's an ignition and we can know when it's right to be able to use wildfire, essentially is a treatment of an area to meet a prescription, essentially. I think the effort is to make managers more successful and to sort of muscle up another tool in the toolbox.
Huh. Very interesting. Although, Malcolm, I wonder if you can tell us a little how the fire management agencies would actually implement the idea of strategic fire zones.
Yeah, it's a great question, Bob. And it's one of the focuses of the paper is we're pretty aware that if you're trying to make these decisions on the fly when a fire happens, it's not an optimal time for being able to shift a strategy to working with fire. But what is currently going on, at least in the national forest system, the 154 national forests in the U.S., is a call for each one of the forests to develop a new forest plan that is good for 15 to 20 years. And we've seen several of the early adopters, the first national forests to develop their plans, to identify and implement these, particularly in California, in which they identified pretty substantial acreage on the the Inyo, the Sequoia, and the Sierra National Forests that were designated ahead of time so that if you got an ignition in these zones, you actually had to provide written explanation if you went in and put it out. So it's 180 degrees from our normal response, which is to go in there and put the fire out and only have to explain to yourself if you don't do that. This is saying ahead of time, these are zones in which we want to let the fire burn under design conditions of fuel moisture and weather conditions. But if you have those conditions, the default is to let the fire burn within these zones. And I think that helps alleviate some of the problem of people being in a stressful situation of, will they be supported by leadership? Will there be some kind of a fallout if you let a fire burn? This is preparing a zone and saying, these are going to be areas we're going to let fire burn in.
Yeah, you're kind of switching up the defaults. That's very interesting. That's kind of cool. Paul, you have anything else to say about the paper?
Yeah, I think that it also represents a really cool opportunity to share knowledge and practice with Indigenous communities. More and more, we're thinking about how we could apply what is a deep vein of knowledge and practice to many of the wildlands, which indeed are ancestral territories of our Aboriginal people, our first people. And this is an opportunity not only to add additional good fire to the landscape, it's also an opportunity to be able to protect first foods, material resources that are important, those kinds of things. So bringing Indigenous communities and their knowledge systems into this space to be able to increase effectiveness of the modified suppression effort, and also to be able to gain advantages that are good news for the Indigenous communities.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that, Paul. So let's just start to wrap this up. And one of the things I noticed about the paper was the list of authorship was just very impressive. The 10 authors, you two lead the pack. But I was wondering, Malcolm, if you could recognize your other authors and then also any funding agencies you'd like to say.
Yeah, my pleasure. There's a great group of co-writers on this paper, including Sarah Bisbing from University of Nevada, Reno, Don Hankins from Chico State, Matt Herto from University of New Mexico, Leta Cobazar from University of Idaho, Mark Meyer, who's a province ecologist with the Forest Service, Allison Rhea and Camille Stevens-Ruman, both at Colorado State, and then Scott Stevens at UC Berkeley. And at least some of the impetus for this and support came from both of the Forest Service research stations, PSW, based in California, and PNW, of course, based in Oregon and Washington, the Northwest. And I'd like to thank both of those agencies for their support.
Thanks for that. Paul, you got the last word. Anything else you'd like to add that the listeners would like to hear?
No, I think we're good.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you both, Malcolm North and Paul Hesburgh, for attending one of our Fire Ecology Chats. It's really an honor to have you two and to discuss such a pretty important paper that will hopefully direct fire management in the U.S. for years to come. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, this has been Bob Keane on Fire Ecology Chats. I'd like to say goodbye to next time. And don't forget, all these papers are available for free at the Springer website for fire ecology. And you can thank the Association of Fire Ecology for this wonderful opportunity. Thank you, everyone, and see you next time.